Welcome to I Run Radio. Coming up, remembering what's special about the Boston Marathon.
When you get towards the end and you're running low on steam, you've got people almost literally dragging you forward and encouraging you to keep going. So it's almost impossible to stop and walk because too many people are going to try to assist you to get back running.
When running takes you farther than you ever planned.
A group of friends were going on a Chicago marathon, and I had always said, I'm never running a marathon. That is an insane distance. I can't believe you people do that. But I couldn't go all the way to Chicago and stand around and watch while everybody else runs the marathon, and they don't have a half marathon option. So I signed up.
And the remarkable story of women running a marathon in Afghanistan.
For a lot of these women, it wasn't about, you know, whether or not they were going to get a certain time, or, you know, it certainly wasn't about whether or not they were going to qualify for some particular race or that sort of thing. It was about going out there and saying, you know what, I want this to be a symbol of women running alongside men, and I want this to make a difference for my younger sisters or for my daughter one day.
All of that and more coming up on I Run Radio. We're joined now by the editor and general manager of I Run, Ben Kaplan. Hello, Ben.
Hello.
How's the running been for you lately?
Oh, pretty good. I thought I had a little flare-up in my knee, and isn't it great when this happens? I ran it off.
Okay.
I went for a run, and I felt fine.
Yeah.
So that, there you go. When you...
Just to be clear, that doesn't always work, and nor are you giving advice right now.
I run medical director.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, no, but when I sit around, and I'm like, what is wrong with my knee? I can drive myself crazy, but when I go run on it, it's like, oh yeah, I'm fine.
Okay.
Just get over yourself. So.
Yeah, but sometimes when you're injured, you really are injured, and if you run, you make it worse. I just want to put that disclaimer out there.
Oh, please.
So we don't get letters from people saying, oh,
no,
Ben Kaplan said you could just run through it, and now I have to have surgery.
Knee injuries, fake news.
Exactly. My buddy Bob that I run with, he and I have this running joke because he used to say when he had a cold, he would just go for a run and bust it out of his system.
Yeah.
And yeah, that's not really a thing either.
No, that's a thing.
No.
That is a thing.
Really?
I do that.
You send me the medical research on that, and I will
happily
read it.
Yeah.
So a lot of people have learned that they have qualified for the Boston Marathon, and they've been accepted, and the field is set for next year's event. And we're actually going to be talking to a couple of people who made the cut and are going to be running in Boston in 2018, coming up on the show today. But this is always an exciting time when people are sending in their registration, telling the Boston Marathon organizers what their time was, and then crossing their fingers that their time was good enough.
Yeah, it's like Christmas comes in October, and, you know, congratulations to everybody. Good luck for everybody trying to make it this month at their races. And really, it's an unbelievable experience. So it's fun to watch, and it's fun to experience with our readers, our friends.
Yeah. And I feel bad, though, for all the people who don't make the cutoff, because now you not only have to run in a certain time, but you've got to make your time by a certain amount, and it depends on how many people register and all of that. And this year, the cutoff was 3 minutes and 23 seconds below
Wow.
your qualifying time. So,
Wow.
you know, that's no problem for people like you, but for runners, mortal runners like me and the rest of us, you know, that's a challenge. And now, you know, for me, I'm wondering if I can do that kind of thing. When I qualified, the one time that I qualified for Boston, I made it by a minute and 24 seconds or something like that. And the cutoff that year was a minute two. So in the end, I had 22 seconds to spare, which is nothing. That's less than a second a mile. And some people this year who made their qualifying time by 3 minutes thinking, okay, that's probably good enough, they're not going to get in, and they're going to have to watch the Boston Marathon on TV, unfortunately. I feel bad for those people.
It's a lot akin to when you're looking for a house in Toronto and the list price of that house is $300,000, and you say, boy, I'm going to save up all my money and buy that house for $300,000. You put your bid in at $300,000, and the thing goes for $475,000.
Yeah.
You're like, what? It said $300,000. It's, I don't know what this what we can draw from the state of the world, but it seems like
These are learning experiences, I guess, is how we have to look at it. Yeah, but if you can find me a listing for a house in Toronto that is $300,000, I'd love to see what that house looks like, because I don't think there is a single house available in Toronto for $300,000, let alone one where people are having a bidding war over it.
It's a recycling bin in in a raccoon's backyard. But that is they're always constantly saying, like, are runners getting faster or slower? And I thought there was sort of evidence that we are getting slower, not faster. Yet with the Boston Marathon times, it would appear that people on the whole must be running faster, or at least that 5% who can, you know, who are trying to get into Boston.
Yeah, that's a good point. I'm not sure how to account for it, because there are other marathons, of course, that have seen their participation plateau a little bit, and some that have even declined. And yet, obviously, the demand for Boston is greater than ever, because more people would have tried to get in this time than any other year. This is the lowest the cutoff time has been. And 30,000 people still made it with times 3:23 below their qualifying time and faster. So, yeah, you're right. It says a lot, I think, in particular about the demand for that Boston experience.
Yeah, which is amazing, too, because that also hasn't diminished over time.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, what about this year would be? I mean, this year is just another year, but it doesn't have to be sort of the anniversary or something.
Right.
Boston is just one of these wonderful things where just people just always want to do it. There's always demand for it. And it does live up to expectations. I mean, I'm always jealous when they announce who's going and stuff. I'm like, boy, I sure wish I was going to Chicago. You know, all these great things. Like, you know, congratulations for everyone who gets to go out there. It's really chasing down a dream.
Yeah. All right, Ben. We'll talk to you again next week.
Thank you. Appreciate your time.
That's Ben Kaplan, iRun's editor and general manager. We have a great show coming up. We're going to talk to two people who found out they will be going to Boston in April. They made those cutoff times, and also the incredible story of women running a marathon in Afghanistan and the documentary film that's being made about it. Coming up next, Boston qualifier and fitness chain co-founder Leonard Schlemp. We'll be right back. Registration is now open for the Tamarack Ottawa Race Weekend. It's Canada's biggest marathon weekend, May 26th and 27th, with a kids race, a 2K, 5K, 10K, half marathon, marathon, and the Lumberjack Challenge. Four races covering a distance of 59.2K. It's the event of the year, and we'd love to see you there. Welcome back to iRun Radio. Congratulations again to all the runners who are going to Boston and found out in the last week or so that they've made the cut. We're joined today by one of them, Leonard Schlemp, who's the co-founder of 24 Hour Fitness, one of the largest fitness chains in the world. He's currently chairman and CEO of Steve Nash Fitness World, the largest chain of fitness centers in British Columbia. Leonard, thanks for being on the show.
You are quite welcome.
So when did you start running? When did this become a passion for you?
I went to business school in Boston, and I saw my first Boston Marathon, I think it was 1978, and was, well, having not been involved with any kind of marathon, was quite impressed with the duration of it and the number of spectators and the whole Boston experience. And that was back in the days, Bill Rogers and Salazar, and there was a lot of Americans involved. I moved after business school, worked with McKinsey in San Francisco, and eventually got around to doing my first marathon, which was 1983. So I did San Francisco. Did not train properly. My typical training was I ran 5 days a week. I did 8 miles at 6 minute pace, and never ran more than 8 miles. So when I did my marathon, I of course hit the wall. I've only fortunately done it once, but it was a painful reminder. Hit the wall.
You only have to do it once, right?
Yes, once is enough. Once is enough. Hit that wall, and it was a painful path to the finish. Managed to finish, and not a horrible time, but managed to finish. And then got involved building 24 Hour Fitness, and had four kids, and moved multiple times. And so I had a large lull period where I did no marathons, and then I resumed running, did my next marathon in 2005, Ottawa. And that's when I got back into it. So I've done, in the last 10 or 12 years, I've done about 10 marathons. and qualified for Boston twice. I just qualified for the third time. And so it's become something I'm doing. This year, I've already done two half marathons and one marathon. I've got another marathon next month. So I'm sort of back in on the wagon.
Yeah.
And yeah.
And what is it that you get out of running? Because obviously you're in the fitness business and you have to stay in shape, but that doesn't mean you have to run and train for marathons. You don't need to do all of that to stay in shape.
No, I find that from a motivation viewpoint, I see we've got lots of members, and if you don't have a set goal, if you don't have something, if it's just I want to stay fit or I want to stay healthy, it's hard to always have the motivation to get up and do what's necessary. There's a lot of days you just aren't in the mood. So I always try to have an upcoming race or goal that I'm training for. And that keeps me motivated. And the beauty of running, because I've got clubs in a lot of different places, and so I do travel quite a bit, is all I need to do is pack a pair of running shoes. So my wife is a serious triathlete, and her travel is a lot more complex because she's got bikes and, you know, she's got a lot of additional stuff she needs to travel with. As a runner, it's very easy, and, you know, I can do it pretty much anywhere, and so it's easy to keep up. And Boston, once you've done it, you kind of get bitten by the bug, and it's such an amazing
Sure.
experience. You know, you certainly want to be able to do it again. And, you know, we just got the results yesterday, so I guess this is the toughest year ever. Over 5,000 people who qualified for Boston will not be racing because they didn't meet the cutoff. So it's, you know, it's a challenge and yet a manageable challenge. So it's something that motivates me.
All right. And we'll talk a little bit more about Boston in a moment. But are there, you mentioned you travel a lot. Do you have favorite places that you've run? Any memorable experiences with a training run or even some of the marathons that you've done?
You know, the place I travel to a lot and where I love running is Vancouver. Actually, I'm there next week. So the whole Stanley Park area around the university, they've got some wonderful areas to run. And the nice thing about Vancouver is I can pretty much run, you know, throughout the year. That's a place we've got the largest club chain in BC, so I'm there quite frequently. And that I would say that that's probably my favorite. When I'm in the Montreal area, our country place is up in Laurentians, and I run on the Petit Trail where I'll be doing my next marathon. And so that's kind of my home turf. And
right.
So it's entertaining not having to travel. It's literally a 15-minute drive to the start from my house. So I'm looking forward to that.
Tell me about when you first qualified for Boston and how you felt when you finally met that threshold.
It's, you know, I ran Ottawa the first time 2005. I wasn't, I didn't qualify. I ran again 2006 and finally in 2009. I find Ottawa is a very good one. Time of year, it's good. It's pretty much totally flat, quite scenic. And the beauty there is I stay in the Westin Hotel, which is literally across the street from the start. So to get from the hotel room to the start is about 2 minutes. So a lot of these ones where you've got to take buses and it's a complicated rigmarole to get to the start, Boston, Ottawa is very appealing. Anyway, finally in 2009, I qualified and I ran Boston for the first time in 2010.
And describe the experience, your first Boston.
It's pretty surreal. I mean, I'd seen it as a spectator actually multiple times, but you can't comprehend basically how for 26 miles straight you've got spectators. I mean, I'm not sure if anyone's ever counted, but it certainly seems like there's over a million spectators, and it's a holiday in Boston. So basically no one's at work, and pretty much all of Boston seems to be out cheering on the runners. And when you get towards the end and you're running low on steam, you've got people almost literally dragging you forward and encouraging you to keep going. So it's almost impossible to stop and walk because too many people are going to try to assist you to get back running. And what's hard to comprehend is the magnitude of runners, because I think in total it's close to 30,000. And it's a very narrow start. I mean, it's like a country road almost. And so to have that many runners starting, it takes eons to get to the start line. And then the first time you, of course, get swept up in the emotion and you go too quickly and it's downhill. And then you pay the price when you get to about mile 20 because your calves are aching because you went too quickly on the downhill at the beginning. So you do that once, and the second time around you don't do that. You're much more careful on that downhill. But no, it's an amazing experience. Sadly, my last Boston Marathon was 2013 when we had the bombs. So that was, and I'd finished, I was about two blocks into the corral when the first bomb went off, but that was a pretty shocking experience.
So you were pretty close by.
We were literally two blocks away. Yeah, and I sort of thank my lucky stars in that my wife was at the finish line, pretty much where the first bomb went off, waiting for me. But when she saw me come through, she followed me down the corral. So we were both two blocks from. From the finish line when that first bomb went off. She immediately knew it was a bomb and grabbed me and dragged me back to the hotel. And it was such a beautiful day and such a wonderful experience to have it end like that. It was sort of shockingly unreal. So the next year when I go back for my third experience will be the first time since 2013, so I haven't been in there in the last 4 years.
And you qualified once again in Ottawa in the spring.
I qualified once again in Ottawa.
Yeah.
Good old Ottawa. And the beauty is, you know, I've told people this, I'm turning 65, in a couple of weeks. It's being a marathoner, it's one of the few groups that actually look forward to getting older, because your qualifying time when you hit those five year intervals goes up by 15 minutes, and 15 minutes is a world of difference. So you actually look forward to getting older as a marathoner, which is one of the nice attributes.
That's right. Yeah. Now, as somebody who is in the fitness business and has been for so long, and you're close to the people who are there at your clubs training every day, you see that in action. How do you account for the interest that people have in long distance running that seems to have been sustained? The interest in Boston is obviously growing because they had to cut the qualifiers off at an even higher threshold this year. So how do you explain that? What is it that makes people want to run marathons and want to run Boston and set these goals for themselves?
You know, it's an ambitious goal, and for a lot of people starting off, I mean, it appears completely unobtainable. But it's one of those things, if you can start off, and literally we have people in our various clubs who, you know, can barely run a quarter mile when they start off. And if you're consistent about it, and it doesn't, you know, it just requires consistency and some, you know, some willpower, you can gradually build up. The key is not building up too quickly and getting injured. But if you build up on a, you know, sort of increasing 10% a week kind of thing, people can achieve amazing things. And so it's a measurable result because Boston is difficult to qualify for. It's when people do succeed, it's something that's recognized as being an achievement. And versus a lot of other things, just coming to a fitness center and, getting on a treadmill, without a goal, it gets monotonous. You need to have something that you're aiming for. And quite often people don't start off saying, I want to qualify for Boston. Quite often they start off saying, I want to run 5K.
Right.
But once you've done that, then it becomes a 10K, and well, then a quarter, you know, then a half marathon becomes feasible. And once you've done a marathon, I think most people who've done one marathon, then they start fantasizing about Boston. So that seems to be the evolution, but I've seen people who literally walk into our clubs, couldn't run a quarter mile, and a year later they've qualified for Boston. I mean, it absolutely is achievable.
Well, it's great to hear your thoughts on running and hear about your own experiences. Congratulations on making it to Boston for a third time. Good luck in your next marathon, and thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you very much. It's been a pleasure talking to you.
That's Leonard Schlemm, the co-founder of 24 Hour Fitness and the chairman and CEO of Steve Nash Fitness World. Coming up next, how one woman found stress relief in running, and it took her all the way to Boston. iRun Radio is brought to you by the Niagara Falls International Marathon, crossing the Peace Bridge from the U.S. into Canada on October 15th, 2017. The Niagara Falls International Marathon is celebrating its 20th anniversary as one of the most unique races in the world. Welcome back. Sarah Penny's family has been dealing with some significant medical challenges. She's found some relief from that in running, and now it's taken her all the way to qualifying for the Boston Marathon. Sarah, thanks for joining us today.
Oh, you're welcome.
Tell me how you got into running.
So I was not. I've always been pretty active. I was involved in sort of ultimate frisbee in my 20s, and I used to play baseball in my youth. So I definitely was not an endurance athlete. I was more of a sprinter and sort of a more of a casual runner. Every now and then I'd sign up for a little 5K race or a 10K race. But when I met my husband, actually, he was quite an athlete, quite a bit. So there was a time where I would follow him to races and participate on the smaller side of things, the smaller races. And I remember we had two little kids, and we were out in Victoria visiting my parents, and I had decided I was going to sign up for a half marathon. I think this would have been probably 2007. And I somewhat trained for a half marathon. I didn't have any clue about running or what you should do or how important long runs or anything like that. And so I muscled my way through this half marathon, and I never again, because it seemed like a lot of work. So I basically took a bit of a hiatus. And then my husband was sort of he would run just to stay fit for other sports, but he actually took up ultra running. So he went from not running any races to running, you know, 100-kilometer race here in Alberta and doing quite well. And then we... in about 2008, our son, who was 4 at the time, got quite ill. He went from being a typical 4-year-old to sort of ill, and then we took him to the hospital. They couldn't figure out what was wrong, and so they thought perhaps his appendix had ruptured because he just seemed unwell. And they took him into surgery because they couldn't see his appendix. They thought, well, maybe it's there and we just can't see it, and it's there's an issue there. Anyhow, when he came out of surgery, it became clear that he had suffered basically a massive brain injury, and it had been exacerbated by surgery. I think it had been going on for a few weeks. And so now he was left at that point as a spastic quadriplegic, so he can't walk, he can't talk, or no communication, anything like that. And that was about 9-10 years ago. And since then, I've kind of gotten into, I think, sport as a form of maybe therapy. I took up running a little bit and would follow my husband, and we would plan trips away, and he would run a marathon and I would run the associated half marathons. And finally, in 2011, a group of friends were going to, maybe 2010, anyhow, a group of friends were going on a Chicago marathon. And I had always said, I'm never running a marathon. That is an insane distance. I can't believe you people do that. But I couldn't go all the way to Chicago and stand around and watch while everybody else runs the marathon, and they don't have a half marathon option. So I signed up, and I you know, muscled my way through that. And of course, vowed to never, ever, ever do it again.
Did you throw away your shoes again this time?
No, I kept my shoes.
Okay.
They're probably more expensive. But, you know, I often, you know, you won't know this, but I often equate sort of marathoning to childbirth. You know, you always finish a marathon, you're like, I'm never doing that again. I can't believe how awful and how painful that was. And then you kind of forget very quickly.
Exactly.
Yeah. So it took me a couple of years, but I, you know, when I got through that first marathon, you don't realize how hard, like everybody talks about the wall and you know, how hard it is, but you don't actually realize how hard those last 10 kilometers are. And I probably walked, you know, five of those last 10 kilometers and it was one of the most challenging things I'd done. And I never really thought I could get any faster. And then a few years later, we decided to go away again with no kids. And we went down to the Sacramento Marathon, the California International Marathon. And my only goal for that one was, you know, okay, I'm not going to walk this time. And doesn't matter how slow I go, but I'm not going to walk. And then you see your times get progressively, you know, a little bit faster and a little bit faster. And yeah, and then finally the last time, I started doing the math on, I think I maybe actually could qualify for Boston. Never, ever thinking that it was something that I could ever do. It was just for the fast people. But last December was the year where I would increase an age group for the 2018 Boston. I'm going to be in the 45 category. But at the CIM race, I was only 43. And so it's this great time where you're in the new age category, but you haven't quite hit the aging.
Yeah, you don't have the slowness. Downside of being older, but you have the advantage
no,
of the slower time.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah, so I really, you know, I put some effort into it, and I've been training with, you know, like sort of some coaching over the years, and it's pretty fun to get fast to learn how to, like as a non-athlete, sometimes it's hard to learn how to get into those zones of discomfort. You realize
sure.
that like it's supposed to be uncomfortable when it's hard, and that's okay. And you don't, you know, you train in the discomfort, and then you learn to get through it. So so I qualified, and I actually qualified under the younger age category, so I was kind of proud of myself for that one.
Good
too.
For you. Now, listen, you described what happened with your son, and that's obviously a huge challenge for your family, and I'm very sorry to hear about that. But what has the running meant for you in terms of being able to have some time to yourself and deal with stress and those kinds of things?
Yeah, like I think that the running gives you, I mean, a huge outlet for stress. And you don't even really, I don't think you realize it or appreciate it at the time. I think having something to focus on that is actually yours, like in a selfish way, it's like, this is my time, this is my priority. And I do make it a priority, like even in hospital times, I still don't miss workouts. I still find a way to get all my exercise in. And I do, it provides a bit of balance, family that's definitely off balance. So, and it really, I think the endorphins are amazing. I think it's really good for health. Like my husband's quite a big runner as well, and keeps our family intact.
What did it mean to you to be going to Boston? Tell me a little bit about what you're looking forward to about the experience.
So I've been there twice as a spectator. When my husband ran his first marathon on a whim, like we were visiting family in Victoria in, 2009, maybe 2010, 2009. My husband ran the Victoria Marathon and he qualified for Boston. And everyone kept saying to him, like, oh, are you going to go run Boston? Are you going to go? And it had never occurred to the importance or the significance of the race.
Right.
And we decided to go. We had a couple of friends from Ottawa who drove down, and we had a great weekend in Boston. And when you get there, you realize it's like a celebration of running. And I'm used to being the spectator on the Newton Hills. I'd always go and watch from the Newton Hills. And this time to be on the receiving end of all that, I'm really excited to be.
And the best of luck to you. I hope you have a wonderful experience, and I hope running continues to be a source of of stress relief for you and that you continue to enjoy it. Thank you so much for joining us on the show.
Oh, no worries. Thank you for calling. Thank you for reaching out.
That's Sarah Penny of Calgary, who will be running in Boston in April. Coming up next, the incredible story of women training to run a marathon in Afghanistan. We'll be right back. Registration is now open for the Tamarack Ottawa Race Weekend. It's Canada's biggest marathon weekend, May 26th and 27th, with a kids race, a 2K, 5K, 10K, half marathon, and the Lumberjack Challenge. Four races covering a distance of 59.2K. It's the event of the year, and we'd love to see you there. Our next guest on iRun Radio is Catherine McKenzie, who's preparing a documentary about the remarkable story of women training for a marathon in Afghanistan. That marathon also happened to be Catherine's first marathon. Kate, welcome to the show. Thanks for joining us.
Oh, I'm so excited to be able to join you and to talk about running.
Yeah, and we got to run together, and one of the great things about meeting new people and running with them is you get to hear some incredible stories, and I have never forgotten, even though it's been some months now, that you told me about running a marathon in Afghanistan and the fact that you were creating this documentary about it. So tell me a little bit about how this came to be. How did you end up running in Afghanistan?
Yeah, well, I imagine it's not everyone's first, you know, story about what their first marathon was like, you know. Whenever people ask me, what was the first marathon you did, I get to say my first marathon was in Afghanistan.
Wow.
And, yeah, so it's kind of a neat opportunity to be able to start talking about this amazing story that I feel so privileged that I got to be a part of. And so I first heard about this marathon actually through another Canadian runner named Martin Parnell. And Martin told me that he had heard about these women in Afghanistan who were training for a marathon. And he said, you know, in this space that they were in, if they wanted to train, they couldn't really run outside, because if they did, there was people that would be throwing rocks at them, calling them names, and even they were receiving threats from terrorists when they were trying to train. And so in order to train for a marathon, they were actually running sort of in this enclosed garden outside of their home and just running laps, hours upon hours of just running laps in this small little space that, you know, is about the size of a backyard, right? And I heard about that, and it just really struck me, because I thought, you know, if I want to go for a run, all I need to do is put on my shoes and head out the door. And here were these women that wasn't their reality. And so when he told me that he wanted to do something to go over and support them and then, you know, encourage what they were doing, I thought, yeah, I want to be a part of that. And, you know, so I thought, well, my skill is in storytelling and in sharing stories and documentary film. And so that was a way that I could be able to help share what they were doing and let other people know about this amazing story.
And what you said there, which I think is really powerful, about how women in some countries can't go out and go for a run. I've thought about that before. In fact, I think the presence of marathon events and the presence of women in those events is a symbol of freedom and equality and opportunity in many countries. Because if you live in a country where women can go out and train and run long distances by themselves, and they can get out and do that and they can participate in races, that's obviously a sign that is a place that is safe and prosperous and where equality is valued. And sometimes we take that for granted in Canada, in North America, but we're lucky to have that here.
Oh, I mean, definitely, Mark. I mean, I think, you know, I was struck. I had actually the privilege to read your book just recently, The Long Road to Boston, and I really resonated where you were talking about this idea, too, of saying, yeah, that in places where women are able to run and where they're able to do that, that's actually, it's an indicator of safety and equality, right? And I think, you know, sometimes I think we take it for granted that, you know, when we are free to run in a space, it's not just that, you know, an indicator of, okay, we have a healthy environment and we have clean air and we're able to do it in that sort of space, but it's also an indicator that it means we're in a society where women are allowed to be out in the public commons. And that's not the case in all parts of the world. And so I think, you know, you're right. It's absolutely a privilege.
Yeah. And the other side of that, obviously, is that even in those countries where women are not allowed to be out in public spaces, there are still some women who are determined to do something like train for a marathon, even when the experience of doing that is even more arduous than training for a marathon where you can run in wide open spaces.
Oh, exactly. And I mean, that these were the kind of women that we wanted to be able to profile, because I think I saw them really as trailblazers. You know, I think back on someone like Catherine Switzer, who only 50 years ago was running in the first Boston Marathon. I think, you know, it wasn't that long ago that here in North America, we were dealing with this same issue. And so the women that we got to follow, you know, women like Niloufar, who, you know, the first year she wanted to participate in the marathon, but her father actually forbade her from participating. And this year she was able to come back, and she was able to do so because her aunt came with her. And so her aunt came as a chaperone. I think, you know, she kind of came alongside as that ally, and Niloufar was able to participate. And I think, you know, isn't that a powerful symbol of that, you know, if we can come together, support one another, and, you know, be allies for one another, then there's opportunities for us to be able to make these kinds of steps forward.
So tell me what the experience was like going there, meeting some of these runners, and then running the marathon yourself.
Well, I mean, it was definitely a unique experience. I mean, just even the lead up to everything, we weren't really able to share much of what we were doing. So we had to keep it all a secret. And a large part of that was that there was some concern that if it was heard that we were coming to film the marathon, that might make the marathon a target and might make it a target for terrorist attack. And so we had to make sure that we weren't really sharing it too publicly or anything. And so we didn't have a website, we didn't have anything. And as I'm sure you can imagine, when you're trying to make a film, usually you share that as widely as possible. You tell the whole world that you're making a film and you shouted it from the mountaintop so that you can get the support and the funding and the, you know, people on board that you need. And so we didn't have that opportunity. And so we were, you know, slowly building everything together and trying to even just be able to raise the funds we needed to get over to Afghanistan in the first place. And you know, there was a time where we weren't sure if that was going to happen. And, you know, we've been really absolutely blessed that there's been Canadian companies that came alongside and said, you know what, we believe in this. We believe in this story. And we want to make sure that women have the opportunity to go out and do something like running. And so there's a Canadian company called Viz, who's a telecommunications company. They said, yep, you know what, we're gonna help you get over there. And so that was amazing, because I think we kind of all been like holding our breath, not knowing if we were actually going to be able to get over in time for the marathon. And once we got over there, oh my gosh, like Mark, just the people that we met were unbelievable. I mean, I mentioned Niloufar already, but we also got to meet another couple of women. One who, where she'd been training, her university had been bombed only 2 months earlier. And so she hadn't been able to train for the marathon for the past 2 months. And, you know, there wasn't really a safe place for her to train. And so, you know, we chatted with her about, you know, what was this going to be like for her? But she said, you know what, I still want to run it. Because it, for a lot of these women, it wasn't about, you know, whether or not they were going to get a certain time, or, you know, it certainly wasn't about whether or not they were going to qualify for some particular race or that sort of thing. It was about going out there and saying, you know what, I want this to be a symbol of women running alongside men, and I want this to make a difference for my younger sisters or for my daughter one day in that next generation.
That's amazing. And so I'm sure you encountered many inspiring stories that are going to be shared in the documentary. What about for you? Because you're there and you're going to do your first marathon, which is a milestone experience, a challenge, even when you're not shooting a documentary at the same time. Plus, I gather it's pretty hot in Afghanistan from people I've talked to who have run there. It can be hot and dusty. So just describe the whole experience.
Yeah, it was a whole different kind of challenge. I mean, so for one thing, as a female runner in Afghanistan, you need to be culturally respectful. And so for me, that meant wearing hijab, which means just dressing modestly. So I needed to have, you know, cover my legs all the way down to my ankles. I needed to cover down to my wrists, and I needed to wear some sort of headscarf. And the clothing needed to be baggy. So basically, it kind of looked like I was wearing my winter running gear, you know, with a headscarf, but it was summertime kind of weather.
Yeah.
So that was really interesting, you know, and I had to train with that in the lead up, you know, and it just made me realize that, you know, there can be, you know, other obstacles that need to be overcome in terms of just training for these kinds of runs. And so I was going out, you know, doing my training runs here in Canada and practicing with that, because I found it was about 5 degrees hotter when I was wearing this extra clothing than what it would have been wearing my regular training clothes, you know. So that was one challenge that we kind of had to figure out. And then when we got over to Afghanistan, as I said, you know, a lot of this, the route for the marathon is kept secret up until just before the marathon. And a lot of the elements of the marathon are kept secret so that it just helps keep the risk a little bit lower. And so we found out only about a week before the marathon what the actual route was going to be. And the route started at 2,500 meters elevation, which was already, we knew, was going to be a challenge.
Sure.
So we were getting, you know, about 70% of our regular oxygen intake. So that was already, you know, a big challenge. But then we found out a week before that the route was actually going to climb an additional 500 meters. And so it meant that we were going uphill for the full first half of the marathon and then downhill for the whole second half of the marathon. And you know, that's just something that's pretty hard to train for. There's not a lot of courses where you run uphill for 21 kilometers and turn around and do it, you know, go downhill for that long. And so that, you know, was something that was another challenge, you know. But I think probably the elevation overall for me was probably the biggest challenge, is just trying to be able to get enough oxygen while we were running.
Well, you got it done, and you have some great stories to share as a result of that. I'm looking forward to seeing this documentary when you have it finished. Just quickly, when do you expect you'll be able to release the film?
Well, you know what? We're hoping we can release it as soon as possible. We're anticipating that we'd like to see it come out in fall of 2018, and we've called the documentary The Secret Marathon. And that's because, you know, we had to keep all of this secret, but we also think that there's this idea that there's a secret that we found out in terms of that each of these characters, what they learned in terms of doing this marathon, each of them came with some sort of obstacle and they were over to overcome that in some sort of way. And so I'm hoping that we'll be able to share this with audiences in the fall of 2018. And yeah, for people that are interested and want to see a little glimpse of it and learn a little bit more, they can check it out at thesecretmarathon.com.
All right. I'm looking forward to it. Very, very excited to see this. And it's a great story to tell and an important story to tell. Kate, thank you so much for joining us on the show.
Thanks so much. Really great to be able to speak with you, Mark.
That's Catherine McKenzie, who's putting together a documentary on women who trained for a marathon in Afghanistan. Very inspiring story. And that's it for the latest edition of iRun Radio. Don't forget you can check us out online at irun.ca. Thanks for joining us. We'll talk to you next week.